As we've been thinking with the girls and boys earlier there in our service, perhaps it rang a bell with you or resonated with you. Perhaps during this time of lockdown or social distancing, one of the things you have been missing is the company of others. Perhaps you've been missing the company of visitors who would normally come around. Those expected or perhaps unexpected knocks at the door that lead to cups of tea, that then lead to a bit of chats and conversation. And if that's what you have missed, well, you're not alone. Globally, the rules in place to stop the spread of this virus have meant that billions of people have been unable to come together in the ways that would be so natural to us. We're all in the same boat when it comes to this. And we can't wait for the day when that knock on the door would come again and company is shared over that cup of tea and conversation. Of course, each culture does it all very differently. In some cultures, refreshments are served the minute you come in through the door, whereas in other cultures, it's served to mark the end of the meeting. So however long this cup of tea is going to last, that's it. Once you're done, you're out through the door. For others, a copious amount of food, and this is perhaps more true to us, a copious amount of food is put on the table, even if it's only 11 o'clock and you're expected to have a sandwich or two, a tray bake, a piece of cake, and then something else on top of it all just to see you home. Other cultures, they hand round the box of biscuits once, goes away, and it never comes out again for the whole time of your visit. Every culture does hospitality different. And I guess we're all waiting for that day when we can all do it again. Well, in our passage this morning in Genesis 18, Abraham gets the opportunity to show hospitality to three visitors who come his way. These visitors are not here for a bit of chit-chat, and they're not really passing through on a journey. But they've come with a very special message to convey to Abraham, even though he doesn't know it when he first meets them. And what we're going to do is break this meeting up over 2 weeks. We're going to look at the first part that relates to God's promises to Abraham today. And then next Sunday, we're going to look at the second part, which brings us back to the city of Sodom and Abraham's nephew Lot. Well, it's been quite a journey for Abraham over these last few chapters. Not that he's actually physically gone anywhere. He hasn't gone on a journey, but it's the journey that God has taken him on because God has met with him twice now in chapters 15 and 17. And in the middle, in chapter 16, he has tried to take control of God's promises and trying to fix the problem himself. Taking control of the situation taught us that both Abraham and Sarah didn't really trust God. They didn't really trust the promises that God was making, that God would be true to his word. So, in Genesis 15, God took Abram, as he was then called, outside his tent and showed him the night sky and said, "Look up to the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them." Then he said to him, "So shall your offspring be." It was a night that Abraham would never forget. It was in this moment that we're told something about Abraham that would never leave him. In verse 6, we read, "Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness." This credit that would never leave him, It would be his testimony, his enduring testimony of faith in God for not only the rest of his life, but for the rest of history as we read it in Scripture. So that starry night sky was something that Abraham would treasure and that would never leave him as he looked up to try and count the stars, but of course he couldn't. There were so many, and this was the image God used to fulfill or to convey that message to Abram, what he was really saying. But in chapter 16 is where we take the dip in the story. It seems that Abraham has forgotten that night sky. It's almost 10 years later as we come to chapter 16. And so 10 years of waiting, Sarah now comes with a plan to ensure that heritage of children. So with a heritage of children, ensuring or forcing the covenant promises that God had made. Well, what she does is she offers her servant girl or her slave girl Hagar, and Abraham and Hagar have a child together who's called Ishmael. But at the end of that story, God makes it very clear that this son, Ishmael, will not be the child of covenant promise. He will be blessed. Yes, he will be blessed because he is the son of Abraham. But he will not be of the covenant family of God. So Sarah, trying to make this all happen, hasn't done very much except shown how much she did not believe that God could be true to his word. So chapter 17 comes, and God appears to Abraham when he is 99 years of age. And what he does in the meeting, as we saw last week with chapter 17, is he affirms his promise of a son through Sarah. And he shows what is going to be the sign of this covenant. And it's a sign for both Abraham and the generations to come after him, and also a sign for God to remember. And the sign will be through circumcision, the circumcision of every male child 8 days of age. So both Abraham and Sarah in this also get new names. Names that go deeper into the meaning of what God is going to do. And once again, Abraham believes God, and he immediately goes and he circumcises every male in his household, not only himself and Ishmael, but includes his servants and his slaves, those who he has bought with money, and he circumcises them. And at the end of chapter 17, Abraham and Sarah know a deeper understanding of what God is promising in this covenant. And they also know the name of their son, who will be born in a year's time, and the boy will be called Isaac. So what chapter 17 does for us is, it now goes deeper to show God's commitment in this covenant. There's going to be a sign in flesh for man to remember, and also for God to remember. And of course, this sign in flesh wasn't just for the male, but it covered the household where circumcision would be undertaken. So the girls were included in this act of circumcision, although it was only the male of the family who would have the act done to them. So now we come to chapter 18, and we're told straight away in verse 1, the Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham hasn't moved anywhere from where he settled when he came into the land. He had settled near Hebron and on the land of a man named Mamre. And we really looked at Mamre and his family whenever Abraham went to save the cities of the plain, Sodom and all of those cities, whenever the Mesopotamian kings were coming in to raid them and take away the people. That's when we got to hear about Mamre and his family. But Abraham is still here, outside Hebron, near the oaks or the trees of Mamre, and he's having an afternoon siesta. He's there at the heat of the day, sitting in the shade of his tent, and he sees three men standing nearby, the text says. And this would not have been unusual, as Abraham's response shows us that he knew exactly what to do when strangers would come his way. But these are not three ordinary strangers. Although we don't know it yet, Moses has told us right in verse 1 that it is the Lord who has come to visit. But in the story narrative itself, we don't know who these strangers are. So it'll be verse 10 that will tell us that one of these strangers is God. And in chapter 19 and verse 1, that the other two are angels. And we'll come to that in later verses and next week in chapter 19. In 2 weeks' time in chapter 19. See, this is the Lord's third appearance to Abraham, and it will be the last. This is the climax of God's continuing promises and pronouncements to Abraham. So on seeing these three strangers, Abraham runs to them and he bows low to the ground. And what all this is in his speed in getting there and then bowing down, this simply shows the start of Abraham showing hospitality to these three visitors, even though he doesn't know who they are. He addresses the one who he perceived to be the leader of the three by calling him, as the text tells us, my lord, which is a polite form of address. It's akin to the English word sir. And what Abraham does is he insists that these visitors allow him to provide for them. So it was customary in these times for a host to provide water for guests to wash their feet, which was normally done when stopping on a journey or entering someone's house. As happens here, male hosts did not do the washing of the feet themselves of their guests, but provided water for them to do it themselves. So these three visitors, they agree. They allow Abraham to show them hospitality. And Abraham immediately then goes to Sarah and instructs her to quickly, as the text says, get three seahs of fine flour and knead it, and bake some bread. He then rushes himself to the herd and selects a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. So all this rushing around to get this meal ready, and still Abraham doesn't know who he is hosting. So Abraham is doing this because this is what is expected of visitors coming his way. Abraham brings curds, which is an early form of butter. Butter, we don't believe, was known how to be made back then. So curds were used from the milk as butter, and milk was also brought, and the guests were invited to eat. This wasn't a 20-minute cook-up. This would have taken hours to prepare. And so as the guests have waited, they now eat. And as they eat, Abraham, as the host, he doesn't eat with them, but he stood a little bit away observing the visitor, ready to provide for any of their needs or their requests. And the tree under which they ate was presumably one of the oaks of Mamre that had been mentioned earlier in our passage. So having eaten this food, the guests now inquire about the whereabouts of Abraham's wife, Sarah. So if you're following the text in your Bible at home, we're now at verse 9. And this is the first hint that we have in the story itself that these are no ordinary guests. Because they not only know that Abraham was married, but they even know the name of his wife. The new name that was given to her in the previous chapter. And as much as Abraham was following social protocols in hosting these guests, it turns out that Sarah was observing these protocols also, because she did not mingle with the male visitors, but was in the tent as the meal was being eaten. Well, Abraham's response in verse 9 to these questions, he tells them that she's there in the tent. And this will tell us in a moment that Sarah has actually been included in this meeting the whole time, because verse 10 tells us she was listening at the entrance to the tent. Now, the picture I've put up, I'm sure, wasn't as obvious as all of that. But there she is, eavesdropping, out of sight, behind the flap of the tent, listening to what was going on. So she has been in this meeting the whole time. So knowing that Sarah could hear the conversation, the Lord now gives Abraham and Sarah the most specific version of the promise of a son. In verse 10, we read God saying, "This time next year, your wife will have a son." This is where we know that it's a year's time, because the coming of these visitors, we believe, is in quite quick succession to Abraham having undertaken circumcision. So it's going to be in a year's time, because last week Abraham was 99, Sarah was 89, and Abraham laughed and said, "Can someone who is 100 have children?" And God said, yes. And so now we know a year's time when he will be 100 and Sarah will be 90, they will have a son. We move on to verse 11, and the text reminds us what this story has been telling us throughout, that Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. The text saying that she was past the age of childbearing is a physical idea, that she physically, because of her age, she couldn't have children. And we're continually reminded of this fact because what God will do in the life of this woman and of Abraham is so beyond human thinking and what and how our minds think of the physical human body that it can only be done by him. So we are reminded that what God is talking about is humanly impossible, but it is not impossible with him. So Sarah found the statement by the Lord so startling and incredible that she laughed to herself in verse 12. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? She saw no possibility whatsoever of becoming pregnant because she's there in the text referred to herself as worn out. And she wonders if she will have pleasure from her aged husband. Well, God knows exactly what is going on, and he addresses Abraham about Sarah's response. And here God is doing something that would have been expected at the time. He is preserving Near Eastern etiquette. He's confronting Sarah over her laughter and skepticism, not by talking to her directly, but by addressing it to Abraham. And God basically paraphrases the first part of Sarah's statement as, will really have a child now that I am old? That's what she's asking. Will I really have a child now that I am old? God then gives a rhetorical challenge as a rebuke to Sarah's unbelief, because in verse 14 he says, is anything too hard for the Lord? That's what he asks. He asks that question, is anything too hard for the Lord? And the expected answer is an emphatic no. Nothing is too hard for the Lord. And Abraham and Sarah